Two conditions by which the individual body is placed in a hierarchy. The immortality process we talked about, however, is not natural. It brings about a number of consequences which I previously called the ping-pong game between nature and culture. It includes reductions of and to political, artistic, scientific, and religious fields. Here I will only mention two conditions as an example, because they are so closely linked to an image of society as a perceptual hierarchy. One is the individualization connected with a downward biomedical reduction, the other is the superior genius connected with an upward cultural reduction. The first consequence becomes apparent when we look at the growth of psychoanalysis. I refer to its psychological determination, as it suggests a body that stands apart from the social environment and can be treated or cured as such. It constructs a downward biomedical reduction that refers to the natural body with its sexual urges that, according to Freud at least, are censored by society, in such a way that the psychological problems can be cured by acknowledging these biological urges, quite harmless in themselves. It does, however, create images of the individual body whereby its sexual direction forms its primary identity. We classify three genders now, but we still have no idea about individual erotica, except as one defined through sexual relations. When Roland Barthes wrote Lover's Discourse, he noted that its language nowadays touches the boundaries of absolute loneliness. A language spoken by thousands, as he said, but completely ignored and ridiculed by all the languages that surrounds it. But what psychoanalysis brought about in terms of conscious and unsubconscious had even more impact. It allowed the therapist to give explanations about the subconscious and the chain of feelings of his patients, which ruled out the omnipotence of their feelings. The body within the psychoanalysis seemed to be dangerously unaware of itself. It does not know what it means until it is told so. If it becomes aware of its subconscious drives, it can reach the height of an enlightened animal, but not much more. The analogy with linguistics is striking, as the presumption of this same subconscious structure, for instance Trubetskoy, structural phonetics, gave way for Levi-Strauss to introduce structuralism in anthropology, and for linguists to presuppose that individuals are unaware of the grammatical rules by which their language capacity functions. On the one hand, the subconscious has opened up an entire field of speculation. On the other hand, it is quite easily ensured cultural conformism. Once the individual is cured, he, and most especially she, will function again in society, leaving no trace of its questionability. Society needs no cure, and neither does language. The subconscious has become the source of metaphors. The body is its mediator. Dreams are viewed as purveyors of latent messages. The suggestions that their message is being censored by the dreamer, censorship itself being an absolute political construction, invites us to dig behind the metaphor of the dream as text. Strangely enough, if we look at dreams as metonyms of society, their images primarily show that classifications, the real censors, are lame instruments of individual expression. Well then, the second consequence. This becomes apparent through an upward cultural reduction. After discussing Sapir's article named Culture Genuine and Spurious with many of my colleagues over time, I found that the article, and especially of course through its title, repeatedly elicited comments like, "Of course, after reading this article, you always hope to belong to those that possess a genuine culture." In discussing Sapir's article with students, I was often confronted with a similar misunderstanding. Somehow it seems that the adjective of genuine creates a chain of associations Sapir himself at least never intended, as he referred to genuine in the sense of a creative individual perception and expression of life. Many of his readers seem to confuse this with a highly gifted intelligence for originality by some and a public appreciation by most. What Sapir considered inward quality is being turned into an outward quantity, and with it the notion of status enters the field of genuine culture, a concept internally close to the capacity of every individual then becomes all of a sudden a strategy for a small elite, a superhuman culture masters of originality, the human superb. The result is a chain of terms and words and forms, an ideological justification, one in which culture, equally as during the French Revolution, becomes personified and idealized. However, economic and social differentiation as personification of the individual body can hardly be called individual, genuine, or satisfying to its needs. Here we fall into the trap of our modernistic expectations about low culture and high culture. In fact, it is quite a Darwinist approach.